I want to encourage you to take your copy of the scriptures and turn with me to Genesis chapter 37. As we continue on in our new series entitled, When God Steps In, it is focused on two words that show up occasionally through the scripture. Those two words are, but God. And it holds in contrast the actions of men and in response the actions of God. And this is this account that we are to look at here this morning is about Joseph. Joseph is a powerful, powerful story here, my friends. It is a true story. It is history. And there is much that we can learn from this account. My friend, we live in a world where there is evil. I mean, and it's everywhere, you know. We can run into it as sometimes we're the very cause of it. Shame on us. But you know, in light of that, everybody likes a payback story. Somebody does something horrible and you get to get them back, you know? I mean, it doesn't sound very godly, but let's face it, there's a bit of enjoyment in it. For example, the Chicago Cubs outfielder Andre Dawson paid a $1,000 fine, think of it, for arguing with an umpire about whether the ball was a strike or a ball. $1,000 fine. So you know what he did? And he wrote out the check, you know, $1,000. And in that little memo section, he said, donation to the blind, you know? Little get you back a little bit, you know? Remember hearing a story about a woman who was late for work, kids and breakfast and all sorts of things. She had an appointment that she had to get to. And she pulls into the parking lot at perhaps a high rate of speed, waiting for this person to backed out just the right way so the car in another direction pulled in. Stole her parking space. How many of you have had your space taken? Raise your hand. Come on, it happens out there. Shame on you, parking space takers. Well, she drove around the parking lot, found a spot, went in for her first appointment, which was an interview for a position. And as she sat down and straightened out her papers, in walked the gentleman laughing at her for grabbing her space. You know, yeah, that's going to be a bad interview when you just cut off somebody to take their space. It'll get them back kind of stuff, you know. One of my favorite stories here, and we can all relate to this, is this particular family got a foreclosure notice on their door. Sad story, you know, it happens all the time. But the funny thing about this is they paid for their house with cash. There was no foreclosing going on. A Bank of America, I think, was the culprit in this one. And, you know, clerical errors, could have been a neighbor, who knows. But they were relentless in trying to take this house away. And they ultimately took this family to court. And while the judge saw these facts, he, of course, ruled for the homeowners. I mean, they didn't owe anybody any money on the house, you know? And so the judge put a judgment on Bank of America for just shortly over $2,500 to pay for all the court fees and the hassle that this family went through. But you know what? The Bank of America didn't pay it. They put it off and put it off. So this guy went to court and foreclosed on one of the branches of the Bank of America. I kid you not. The sheriff showed up and they were hauling stuff out of this bank. Some of you have experienced that. Hauling bank furniture out of a bank until finally the bank manager walked out with a check. You know, it's just sometimes it's fun to see payback. And the story of Joseph is a story of payback. Well, like some of you know this story, you're like, I don't think it's about payback, is it? Well, we'll see. Take a look with me, if you will. And friends, Joseph lays out the perfect example on how to respond to evil. So take a look with me, if you will, Genesis 37. We're going through 50 on this one, so, you know, buckle up and lick your finger, friends, because we're going to turn fast here. First thing we're going to look at, a little background in the life of Joseph. How about his family? In Genesis 35, in verse 3, we read this. Now Israel, that's Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his brothers and his sons. Why? Because he was the son of his old age. And you know how he expressed his love? Look at this. he made him a robe of many colors. Now, friends, it wasn't just a fancy shirt that he made for him. This was like giving him the suit while all of his brothers got a new pair of jeans. You know, in other words, he was putting Joseph above all of his brothers. He was the guy standing around making sure everything was done right. You know, and now look at the response of his brothers, and this is not surprising in any way, knowing the sinful hearts of men. You know, so we see his father loved him, but his brothers loathed him. They couldn't stand this guy. Look at verse 4. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peacefully to him. Now again, none of this was because of anything that Joseph did. This was because of how his father treated him. And look at here. They hated him. They could not speak peacefully to him. Now we have the big transition in the story in verse 5. Now Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. So they hated Joseph because of the way that his father loved him. And they hated him because of this dream. And you know what the dream was. You know, Joseph dreamed. Now, this is revelation, not just some weird after dinner kind of weird thing that came to his head. You got to see that in this perspective. God is showing Joseph something that will indeed happen. And it happens twice, and we'll learn later on this, in the account. It happens twice in a different way to solidify, to show that it is certain and that it will most certainly come about. And the dream was about Joseph and his brothers out to tying up sheaves, you know, and suddenly all of the brothers' sheaves bowed down before Joseph's sheave. And they got the idea what that meant, and they hated him for it. The second one was that he had another dream about even the moon and the stars bowed down to him. Jacob found out about it. He says, "Oh, will I bow down before you as well?" And they didn't like that dream because nobody likes to see themselves as in second rate, in second place. So Joseph, he grew up in a bit of a hostile family. And that's not even where the suffering started, friends. Notice in verse chapter 37, verse 18. Now, Joseph, his brothers had taken the flocks and gone and traveled with them to take care of them. And Joseph's father, Jacob, said, "Joseph, go take a look and see what they're up to. You know, again, you look after them." And so off Joseph goes, and you can read about the account. We're going to skip over the details here until we get to verse 18, and we're going to see this. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They had had enough of this guy and his dreams and his colorful robe and his father's love, and they said, "We'll just kill him. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these pits. And then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him and we will see what becomes of his dreams." This is just delicious to read in light of the end of this story, my friends. But the hate, oh, the hate they have for him. But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, "Well, let's not take his life." And Reuben said, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit, into the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father." So a bit of kindness in this. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe. They had to get rid of that robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. And they took him and threw him into a pit. And the pit was empty. And there was no water in it. And they had thrown him in there to suffer. Well, my friends, in verse 25, we see they sat down to eat. And we can assume that they didn't give Joseph anything. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum and balm and myrrh and on their way to carry it down to Egypt. And none of this is a coincidence, my friends. I want to show my hand a bit in all of this. God had shown Joseph exactly what would happen in the future. He did not give them the circumstances in which this would take place. But I want you to notice as we move through this account, every step that takes place that leads to this end is the providence and sovereignty of God working among men. God used even the hatred of these brothers to bring about the fulfillment of what God said would happen. I want you to notice, friends, that they sat down, they saw these Ishmaelites coming. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites." Wow, I mean, this is some serious hate. Let's sell our brother as a slave to these Ishmaelites. Wow. And let not our hands be upon him. Well, after all, he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to them. Then Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites. For 20 shekels of silver, they went home and bought video games and laughed. They took Joseph to Egypt. This is all part of God's plan here, my friends. This is all part of God's plan. This is not Joseph as a victim. This is Joseph in the hands of God to bring about his plan. I would remind you of Genesis chapter 15. In Genesis chapter 15 in verse 13, the Lord had said to Abraham, "Know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment on that nation that they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions." Talking about the slavery in Egypt. How did they get there? Well, you're reading the story right now. Through the evil acts of Joseph's brothers, their hatred that could not be subsided in any way. And yet, God is fulfilling exactly everything he said. And the question is how he chose Joseph. We'll take a look at the story. It continues, my friends. Chapter 39 and verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. Look at that. The Lord was with Joseph. No, he's a slave. He got taken away from his family as a prisoner. He was sold as a slave. What do you mean that God is with him? Friends, one thing you must know about God is that in his sovereignty, in his wisdom, in his goodness, it does not mean that your life will be easy. As a matter of fact, sometimes the way that you will glorify God the greatest is through difficult times and your response to them. Let me say that again. And some of the ways that you will glorify God the greatest is in the way you respond to the difficult times you are going through. God chose this path for Joseph. Joseph is not a victim here. God is sovereignly moving the pieces on the chessboard to bring him in a perfect place at the perfect time with the right people and the right problems. God will be glorified. And Joseph doesn't need to understand that. He just needs to respond by faith. And here we are in chapter 39, in verse 2, and we see the Lord was with Joseph. And even in all of this, he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his Egyptian master. And his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. The success that he was going to experience in Egypt would never have happened back at home wearing the colorful robe, my friends. Here is God moving him to the right place with the right people to accomplish his plan. Well, my friends, his master saw that the Lord was with him, that the Lord had caused all that he did to succeed in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Why? Because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. And here Joseph, dragged away, sold by his brothers, is now beginning to rise. Does he have freedom at this point? Well, perhaps he has more freedom than he ever had because nobody's chasing him after and hating him. And here he has a chance to succeed and perhaps be what his father saw in him, which is maybe why he gave him the robe to begin with. But notice here in verse 7, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. He was a good-looking dude, apparently. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me. Lie with me. No one will know. No one can see. Lie with me." Can hear the whispers, the hiss of the serpent. Lie with me. But I want you to notice Joseph's response to this. But he refused, verse 8, and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am. And nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife." But I want you to notice the sum of all of this. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Seems Joseph, even in the midst of all of this, had a great faith and a great eye for God. How could I do this great wickedness against God? And as she spoke to Joseph, day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or even be with her. But one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment and said, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. It has been said that he may have left without his garment, but he certainly left with his integrity. Day after day, no one will know. Lie with me. You know what I'm talking about. Don't fall for it, friends. Well, as the account continues, we see, but he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw, verse 13, that he had left his garment in her hand and fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to him, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. And he came into me to lie with me." And I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. And here he is being falsely accused. Did he not just honor God in his actions, one might say? I mean, doesn't God owe him something for that? And yet, look at what happens here, my friends. Verse 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Wow. So he's been thrown into a pit, unjustly now thrown into prison. And there he makes some new friends. And by the way, friends, they're not friends. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt, a very trusted position. It wasn't just a guy that walked around with a cup. Before the king put his lips on that cup, the cupbearer would taste it. If it had been poisoned, he would certainly die first, a risky endeavor to be sure. But sometime after this, the cupbearer, the king of Egypt, and his baker committed an offense against the Lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard and in the prison where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them. And he attended them. And they continued for some time in custody. And one night, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. And when Joseph came to them in the morning, that's verse 6, he saw that they were troubled. Verse 7, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody of his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? Seems like a guy who cares, huh? I mean, he could have been in the miserable corner with his own problems. Poor me, look at me. I've done everything right. I've tried to be good. I did what my dad said, and he respected it. But my brothers hated me, and they wanted to kill me, and they were going to kill me. Then they sold me as a slave, and then I was bought by this guy, and faithful from day one. I served hard in that place. I did everything I was supposed to do. I even said no to his wife. But here I am in prison. Well, what a great time to turn your back on God and say, forget it. But he didn't. He didn't. Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. Verse 9, so the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. And in my dream, there was a vine before me, and on the vine, there were three branches. And as soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Well, friends, you and I can guess what this means, but here's Joseph, and he says to him, this is the interpretation. Three branches, 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. And then with this bit of a caveat, Joseph says here in verse 14, only remember me when it is well with you, and please do this kindness mentioned to me to Pharaoh's and so get me out of this house. For indeed, and here is Joseph's account, I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews. And here also I have done nothing that they should put me in this pit. And when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, well, I also had a dream. And there were three cake baskets on my head. That must have been fun to tell. Oh, yes, and I was balancing them delicately. Three cake baskets on his head, and in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked goods for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation. Three baskets equal 3 days, right? Yeah, right, there you go. Three baskets, 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you. Surprise. And hang you on a tree. Wow, how did he get that one? I'll tell you, the Lord, that's how. And on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, He made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants and restored the chief cupbearer to his position. And he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to him. And he was forgotten. In all of the celebration, in all of the wonder of being restored, the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. What a sad story. And yet at this moment is when everything changes. All of the cards are now on the table, all of the pieces properly ordered. God had told Joseph what would occur. And Joseph could certainly have said, well, it hasn't happened yet. And that was the key word being yet. And this is where it changes. We've seen Joseph's family. We've seen Joseph's suffering. And now we see Joseph's rise. Here in chapter 41, now Pharaoh has a dream. After 2 whole years, I love the way that's phrased. Not after 2 years, 2 whole years, all of them from beginning to end, Joseph is forgotten in this prison. And Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows. There's that number. Guess what that means? Attractive and plump. And they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke, and he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and its wise men. And Pharaoh told his dreams. But there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Oh, if only there was someone who could interpret dreams. And at that moment, we find the baker's recovery of his memory in verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offense today. Well, thank you very much after 2 years. And when Pharaoh was angry with his servants, he put me in the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. And we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. And a young Hebrew there was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. And when we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. And I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And the dream is interpreted here. In verse 15, the dream is repeated to Joseph. Now, I've already told you what it is, so we're going to kind of skip ahead. We'll get right to the interpretation. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will consume the land, And the plenty will be unknown in the land by the reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dreams means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. And here Joseph has an opportunity to provide some counsel. Verse 33, now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. And let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That the food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine. Well, this pleased Pharaoh, verse 37, and Joseph is promoted to second over all of Egypt. He went from the prison to a throne. How did that happen? Because God had arranged it all in his sovereignty and in his providence, moving people from one place to another. This famine is coming, and it will hit the family of Jacob. His brothers will find themselves in the midst of this. And this is where we find him, Joseph's payback. In verse 42, the land of plenty has, the time of plenty has hit. And when Jacob, verse 1, learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you stand there looking at one another? He said, behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him, because apparently those sons are dangerous. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and he was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brother came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Exactly what God told him. God didn't tell him how. He told him what would happen. And Joseph endured. He was wronged, but God providentially put him exactly in the right place at the right time to save his family. And there it is. Now the events of chapters 42 to 49 include Joseph sending them home with their grain and their money, tells them to leave Simeon and bring back Benjamin. He has not revealed himself yet. And the grain runs out, and Jacob sends them back with Benjamin, and they return, and Joseph, who has kept his identity from his brothers, seats them all in this great feast by birth order, and they look around stunned. How could anybody know this? And Jacob now is brought back to Joseph. And here, the climax of the story in chapter 50, in verse 15, this is the payback. This is when all his brothers get what they deserve. Verse 15 of chapter 50. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, it's all over now. Jacob has come, been reunited with his father, and his brothers now know it's Joseph. They're terrified. And they all go back to the land of Canaan. And now Jacob has died. He has blessed his sons, and Jacob is dead. And when his brothers saw that their father was dead, well, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back all the evil that we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying,
Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. That's quite a note, isn't it? Because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of God your father. And look at what Joseph did. Licked his chops and went after him. But that's not what the Bible says. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, and here it is. But God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones. And thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Remember, they could not speak peaceably to Joseph. And here is the payback, my friends. He overcame evil with good. All things, my friends, work together for good for those who are called according to the purpose for God's purposes. Sermon in a sentence is this. What is the principle that we have learned here in Joseph's life? All things work together for good for those who are called according to God's purpose. Now, what it doesn't say is all things work together really easy and good, really convenient and good. This is Romans 8:28, by the way. All things work together for good to those who are called according to his purpose. And so I say unto you, live as Joseph lived. Return evil with good. Return evil with good. And when you return evil with good, you will overcome evil with good. That's also Romans chapter 12. And my friends, boy, this is a good one to write down here. Believe what God says and not what you see. There is no way that Joseph, simply watching the events of his life, could have thought that God was bringing about good through him. The events of his life told him the opposite. And yet God, in his sovereign providential work, brought about good in preserving this family. Now, you can also imagine that Joseph might have had friends at home that heard about this whole account and said, oh, God, bring him back. God, preserve him from all of this difficulty. Take it away, Lord. And it would have brought about their own deaths. We oftentimes pray not what God has told us, but what we see and what we feel. God is good. God uses everything. God uses the sinful acts of unbelievers and the righteous response of believers. He uses all of it. All things work together for good for those who are called according to God's purpose. He had a purpose, and he accomplished that purpose. And now the people of Abraham, Jacob and all of his sons are now multiplying in the land of Egypt, and they are becoming a nation. 400 years they will multiply, and they will come out by God's great hand who will judge these people. God's purposes all working together. But the counsel of this, my friend, is be on the right side. Choose to trust God and be faithful where you are. God is using every bit of it. You have a wicked, evil supervisor who is unkind. Serve faithfully. Return evil with good. It glorifies God, and it is a part of God working out his plan. Respond well to these things, my friend. I want to recommend you go back and review this account. It's just as horrible as it sounds, my friend. And you know, sometimes God uses things like brain surgery when they cut off the top of your head, and if nothing more, to put you in front of an audience who has never heard the gospel. You say, well, that's not fair. You're right, it's not. It's grace that God could use wicked people like you and I who are selfish and self-absorbed. And we can learn to say no to ourselves and yes to God for his glory and the good of others. Choose a different way, my friends. Don't worry about what you see. Worry about what God says about it. And we'll celebrate in the end. God help us. It's easy to say all these things, but I know it's hard.